Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. Hello, America, and happy Monday. Good to have you back for another great show. We've got two amazing guests today. We're going to be talking first about the state of Joe Biden's leadership on the world stage, focused on the two very important questions, by the way, that have dominated or directed American foreign policy for decades. Can Joe Biden define the American interest in each of his policy objectives? And two, can he get others to follow him, or is he always following in behind? A lot of people, including Politico and The Hill, have written very tough stories about the president in the last couple of days, saying he's not leading. He's not exercising the powers of the president. He's acting like a candidate who doesn't have any control over the destiny of the country. That's not what the commander-in-chief is empowered to be. So first up, one of the really great foreign policy thinkers. He's at the Quincy Institute. He is Trita Parsi, knows a lot about Iran. That's what he's most famous for. But he really is a strategic foreign policy, national security thinker extraordinaire. And we're going to talk a little bit about this, because just in the last 24 hours, the president has been embarrassed again on the world stage with his Latin America summit, people backing out, including the Mexican president, our neighbor to the south. That's never happened to an American president before. And it's very much like the episode in February when they had the first China summit back in February 2021. The Chinese embarrassed Tony Blinken on the world stage. This process keeps going on. It's like Groundhog Day, the movie. The president continues to drop the ball on foreign policy, constantly being prodded. Other leaders went to Ukraine early. He didn't, to show support. He was slow to get some of the weaponry and support, so much so that Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, had to call him out. Trita Parsi is going to explain, how did we get this way? What can Joe Biden do to fix it? And what does it mean for the world when the American president is leading from behind and failing to identify the objectives that Americans are trying to achieve with each of its foreign policy and national security goals, policies, plans? And then second up, we've got our good friend Philip Patrick from Birch Gold. This man had every aspect of the economic downturn lined up months ago. He was telling people on this show, $5, $6 gas, inflation out of way, Fed would have to admit it was wrong on inflation. All of those things have happened. Now, that's bad news that they happened. It's good news that Philip Patrick was right when the Fed and the Joe Biden Treasury Secretary and others were wrong. Boy, Janet Yellen late last week said, I don't know how I missed this stubborn inflation. Well, the answer is you didn't miss it. It was there all along. You just refused to acknowledge it because you were trying to clear the way for more federal spending. I think Philip Patrick is going to talk about that today. So two great guests back to back. There's no reason to delay. Let's take a quick commercial break here from our great sponsors, advertisers, and partners, and then come back. First up, Trita Parsi, followed by Philip Patrick, right after this. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Hey folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a 4-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right, you heard me right. 4 years for 30 bucks. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. Always glad to have this next guest on, one of the great foreign policy thinkers in our time. Joining us, the Executive Vice President of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, Trita Parsi. Trita, great to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me.
There is so much going on in the world. I don't even know where to start, but I want to take something that's very timely in the last few days. There's been a lot of discussion about it. People are buzzing and trying to understand exactly what it means, but there was a kerfuffle over the weekend over the decision by the Biden administration against inviting Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua to the Summit of the Americas. The Mexican president is raising some objections, and there's a lot of doubt about how this summit is going to ultimately roll out. Your thoughts on that entire episode?
Well, look, everyone I've spoken to have made it really clear that, you know, this is just a massive mess up. This is not the situation we should be in. But I think it also points to a deeper problem that we have, which is that so much of America's focus is on Europe, understandably, mindful of what's happening in Ukraine and Russia's illegal invasion. So much of the focus is on the Middle East, which I think is less understandable because it's not that strategically important any longer. But all of this is coming at the expense of America's attention to its own backyard, which is the Western Hemisphere. A tremendous amount of neglect, a tremendous reduction of diplomatic presence. We're worried about, you know, whether Russia is going to fill a vacuum if the U.S. takes out 900 soldiers out of Syria. But what's really happening is that the absence of America's involvement diplomatically in Latin America has opened up the floodgates for the Chinese and others to be extremely active with no American counter or any significant presence. And now we're seeing the implications of that. And I think it should be a wake-up call because particularly mindful of climate change, what we're going to see happening in Central America and Latin America and the refugee flows that will happen as a result of the change in the climate, it's going to be a far, far greater challenge to the United States than much of what we're seeing happening in the Middle East.
Yeah, we really don't have our eye on the ball in our own hemisphere. I mean, that's what's amazing about it. This is, talk about something close to home. It's in our backyard, and we don't seem to have the same focal point. We also seem to be slow to recognize China's role in Africa and taking a lot of our allies and turning them into their allies. Your thoughts as you look at the Biden foreign policy paradigm 15 months in, are we playing checkers or are we playing chess in diplomacy right now?
I don't know what we're playing.
That's probably a better checkers, answer, yeah.
Yeah, checkers might actually be too charitable of an answer. I'm quite frustrated, I have to say, because I think we're seeing a very reactionary foreign policy with frames that I frankly don't think are particularly helpful. So let me give you an example. We have framed the war in Ukraine as a battle for the future of the rules-based international order. And right there, with that framing, which may play well here, may well, you know, play well in Europe,
right?
But for the rest of the world, it's not playing well at all, because many of the countries in the global south are completely opposed to what Russia is doing in Ukraine. They see it as a violation of international law, the violation of another country's territorial integrity. And that framing would have gotten them to be much more sympathetic. But once we call it, you know, the future of the rules-based order, many of these countries ask themselves, but hold on, the United States has violated international law extensively, invaded numerous different countries. What kind of order are we now supposed to be making sacrifices for? Is it the old one in which the United States put itself above international law, invaded numerous countries on false pretenses? That's not a particularly inspiring framing for a lot of these different countries. And that is a problem, because India, Brazil, major countries are not on our side when it comes to this issue right now. And it's to a large extent because of how we have framed it.
Yeah.
And I think, again, it shows how the way we are looking at these issues are very much from just our own internal perspective here within the blob in Washington, instead of recognizing that if the United States wants to be a leader in the global community, it has to listen to the global community in order to be able to lead it. And we're not listening enough to understand how other countries are perceiving these things in order to make sure that we can adjust our own message in such a way that it actually will be creating more receptivity for that message outside of the U.S. itself and outside of Europe.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, I mean, obviously we're caught in the emotion right now of the Russia-Ukraine war. We don't like to see what's happened to Ukraine. We don't like the aggression that Putin has. But I think you and others, I even saw Ross Douthat on the New York Times really dug into this over the weekend. We've sort of we've made Ukraine a larger issue for the last decade, quite frankly, than it is to our strategic interests. Is some of our policies being driven by romanticism rather than strategic necessity?
It certainly is not strategic necessity in my view. I don't believe that the future of this century will be determined by this war. It's a horrible war.
Right.
It should be opposed. But if we truly believe that the future of democracy is at stake here, well, then it doesn't follow as to why we're then not even willing to consider boots on the ground. Now, let me make it clear. I'm against boots on the ground. I'm against the U.S. getting more involved in this militarily. I think it's a terrible idea. It risks nuclear war. It makes no sense. But if you are taking the position that this is about the future of democracy and Western civilization, well, then why are you not asking for boots on the ground? It doesn't make any sense. If you're raising the stakes that high, but at the same time are not willing to go forward with what that would then require, then you're not making a convincing case. I think it's a much more convincing case for us to understand that while we have to oppose this, we should be far more active in trying to find a diplomatic solution. Finding that diplomatic solution means, as a first step, to create an atmosphere that is conducive to diplomacy. Right now, we have an atmosphere in which anyone suggesting mediation, anyone suggesting compromise is immediately shot down and vilified and accused of being a Putin hugger. It really signals that we're not serious about diplomacy if we're not willing to create that atmosphere. I mean, I felt really bad when the Pope, I think about a month or so ago, was sending out feelers and hoping that he potentially could help mediate and put an end to this horrible conflict. And the Pope was ridiculed in some of the pages of Washington's most famous papers. We can't do that at the same time say that we're pushing for diplomacy. If we were pushing for diplomacy, we would change the atmosphere and we would move towards making sure that the suffering ends as quickly as possible and recognize that at the end of the day, Russia has already lost. Its key objectives in Ukraine have been lost. Ukraine is not going to be part of the Russian orbit. But Ukraine most likely will end up having to be neutral in order for it not to get stuck in a war again. And that does not change the future order of the world. That does not change whether there's rules-based order or not. Artificially elevating the stakes that high simply is not helpful because it just drives us in a hawkish direction that does not serve our interests.
That's one of the things that I think is missing in foreign policy right now is we fail to define the national interest before we get involved in some of these things. We're like flying by the seat of our pants, and we haven't defined for the American people, for our allies, and for our enemies, which I think is important as well, what our strategic interest is and how we're going to defend it. We seem to have lost that art. A lot of people say, it seemed to, certainly was around for the Reagan years and before that, and some people would argue, probably went all the way up to the end of the Clinton years, and then it seems as though we went in a different direction where the strategic interest was constantly being redefined more for saliency than political saliency than actual strategic interest. Are we at a tipping point in how we go about exercising soft and hard power in America? Is this an inflection point to say, hey, we need to rethink the entire global map?
I think we're past that point. I'm not really sure how we are exercising soft power these days. I think that's a key flaw that we have. I mean, our foreign policy has gotten so militarized, so we can increasingly only think of it in military terms.
Right.
And by that alone, it means that we are undermining a key asset that the U.S. always has had, which is soft power. And again, I think the Ukraine example is a perfect indication of this, in which you actually have a real aggressive move by the Russians, which should have made it much easier for the United States to rally the whole world against it and not just Western Europe and Eastern Europe.
Yeah, it's such an amazing dynamic, and it seems to have just spun further and further out of control, with most Americans saying, what are we doing? Can someone give me an explanation of what we're doing? Let's talk about Iran. Obviously, you've been an advocate of trying to get a deal that would delay nuclear weapons from Iran. Biden went about a new form of negotiations. Everyone I talk to believes that they're really on life support and that we're really maybe just a few weeks away from it falling apart. Your take on what you're seeing and what could have been done versus what has been done on that front.
I feel your sources are quite correct that this truly is on life support. I think it actually has been for the last 3 months.
Yeah.
I wrote a piece back in December of last year saying that an outcome that I saw as likely was that, we would end up in some form of a coma state for the negotiations, meaning the talks essentially have failed, but it's so costly to admit for all sides that it has failed. So we just keep on pretending as if there is a problem.
There's something going on.
Yeah. I think, for the last 3 months, we've kind of been in that state. And I'll be frank with you, I don't think it's a good state, but I do think it is better than admitting defeat, because that will likely then lead to an escalation that will be bad for all sides. So I'm understanding of the fact that despite the fact that there's been no progress, the Biden administration has kind of chosen not to talk about it, not to bring attention to it. Compare that to a couple of months ago, in which the message was that, if we don't clinch a deal in the next 5 days, the non-proliferation value of the JCPOA is going to be gone or not sufficient enough. I mean, that was 3 months ago. 3 months have passed, and we're not seeing anything been done. I think the fundamental mistake was committed by the Biden administration very early on in its term, which is it just didn't go back into the deal. It chose, instead of just doing an executive order on day one or on week one, as it did with Paris, as it did with the WHO, which we just go back in, it decided to negotiate a return. And it decided to take quite some time before it started those negotiations. And it used the initial weeks of the administration to consult with the Saudis, the Emiratis, and the Israelis in the hope of that they would be able to come on board. And the end result has been that it just fueled suspicion on all sides, the negotiation, you know, the negotiated approach is now a year and a half into it, and it's so far been inconclusive. And perhaps most importantly, some of the worst escalation by the Iranians in their nuclear program came during Biden's term as a result of Biden choosing to negotiate a return. Because a negotiated return essentially means that Biden would implicitly use Trump sanctions as leverage against Iranians. I mean, all of Trump sanctions that he put on, that Biden opposed when he was out of office, are still there.
They are.
Biden is, in essence, continuing Trump's policy.
Yeah.
Well, the Iranian conclusion was, well, if there's going to be a negotiated return, Iran needs to have leverage. So they ramped up their nuclear program. And now they're at a point in which they have enough 60% enriched uranium so that they conceivably have only 8.5 days to turn that into 90% enriched uranium, which is weapons-grade uranium.
Yeah.
As long as the deal was in place, the Iranians were always 1 year away from that benchmark, the breakout. Now they're 8.5 days away from that. That's a failure. And the issue is this. For how long can Biden continue Trump's failed maximum pressure strategy without being responsible for its continued failure? It's very easy to blame this on Trump, and Trump deserves a tremendous amount of blame for having got out of the deal in the first place. But it's a year and a half into Biden's term now, and he's continuing that policy. He can't blame Trump for that.
Yeah, such a great point. And he seems to blame everyone but his own team. He's blaming Putin one day. But at the end of the day, I think I forget where I saw it. I think it was a Politico today had an article saying that the president is still running as a campaign candidate and not as president. He's not leveraging those powers that a president uniquely has. And foreign policy is a place where that's really uniquely exposed. Now, I want to ask you about the dynamic of there's been several Iranians killed in the last 3 or 4 days and what looked like to be targeted killings. What's your thought on what's going on there? A lot of people suspect Israel, but your thoughts on this?
I mean, the Israelis have essentially admitted to that in the Israeli media.
Yep.
And New York Times also reported that they had admitted it to the United States. And it, there's no surprise, because at the end of the day, the countries that would either have the motivation, the capacity, and the risk willingness to do this really is only the United States and Israel. And I actually wouldn't even put the U.S. in it, because
that's right.
Even though the United States definitely have the capacity, one could argue the motivation, I don't think the Biden team has the risk willingness to do this. So it really is only Israel that was a potential suspect. And the Israelis have been doing this historically at times, not when the Iranians were on the cusp of a major nuclear breakthrough, but when the Israelis feared that the U.S. and Iran were on the cusp of a diplomatic breakthrough. And it suggests to me that the Israelis are doing this right now because they just want to put the final nail in the coffin of negotiations between the U.S. and Iran. They want the Iranians to lash out, do something escalatory that will put an end to this coma status that we talked about, or at a minimum, shift the debate inside of Iran in such a way that the Iranians just pull out of the talks.
Yeah, and it seems as though we're almost at that cusp there. I want to take you just briefly to the U.S.-Saudi relationship, which with the Yemen conflict, with the oil prices, it seems as though, again, defining the American interest is ambiguous, and we're sort of on both sides of the fence. First, the Yemen conflict. I know you've always expressed grave concern about the Saudis' war on Yemen. Your take on that and the Biden administration's policy on it?
So a couple of points. First of all, the United States is seeking to see if we can prosecute the Russians for war crimes in Ukraine. Washington Post just had a big expose with a research done by Columbia University that showed that the Saudis have engaged in thousands of similar type of atrocities in Yemen over the course of the last 7 years, and those have been done with U.S. assistance. And again, it goes back to the contradiction we talked about earlier on. It's difficult for countries to sign up to fight for this rules-based order if that rules-based order for so long has been the U.S. being above the rules. And this is a very blatant case because you have massive amount of war atrocities and war crimes in Yemen that we actually, frankly, bear responsibility for. Biden promised to put an end to this war. His language and rhetoric was very strong in the beginning presidency and during the
campaign. But not a lot of action, right?
Not a lot of action. A year and a half into it, in my view, he's bending the knee to MBS, the ruler of Saudi Arabia, the de facto ruler of Saudi Arabia, because none of the things that the Saudis needed to do have been done in order to justify Biden now going over there and shaking his hand. I understand that oil prices are very high. People are hurting. And I think Biden does have a desire to push those prices down, not just because of the midterms, but in general because of the state of the American economy. And I find that quite reasonable. However, this has been presented as if this is the victory of realpolitik over idealism, and that rebuffing the Saudis is idealism, but shaking MBS's hand is realpolitik. That is not the case. There are going to be many cases in, that a leader has to choose between strategic necessity and values. This is not one of those cases, because there were plenty of things that Biden could have done to make sure that the United States was not this reliant upon Saudi Arabia and would not be in a position in which it would have to go to Saudi Arabia to beg for lower oil prices. One of the things that could have been done, that should have been done, was to go back into the Iran nuclear deal. We would have Iranian oil on the market right now, and in numbers that are greater than what the Saudis can increase their production right now. So again, it's what we're seeing now is the culmination of a series of massive mistakes by the Biden administration, in my view, in which they pursue the approach towards Saudi Arabia rhetorically in one way, but in practice, they caved. And that caving, which was behind the scenes or quiet up until now, is going to be quite public.
It's just mind-numbing to see the dynamic in the world right now. It seems like so much of U.S. leadership is muted, if not reactive, all the time. Last place, I want to go to China. I know right now there's a effort after the Tokyo trip to get Korea and others to engage in a larger form of containment to basically take the Quad Bloc, the Quad initiative that the Trump administration, quite frankly, the Obama administration before them, put into motion. When you look at the world right now, is China America's greatest challenge?
When it comes to being a country that has the economic ability to compete with the United States, outcompete the United States, yes, China clearly has that capacity. Does it have the military capacity? It does not right now. It is definitely rebuilding its armament, but it's not in a position to be able to project power globally. It can do so in its own neighborhood, which is a very different story. I think the biggest problem is that if we fall for the fallacy of thinking that either we have to dominate China or China dominates us, then that brings us into a zero-sum relationship right away.
Yep.
The thing we miss then is that actually the things that truly are a threat, not just to the United States, but to other countries as well, the thing that has killed more Americans, for instance, than anything else, not terrorism that killed a million Americans in the last 2 years, it was a pandemic.
Yep.
And we're going to have even far greater number of deaths and destruction as a result of climate change. Those type of threats are not resolved by increasing the Pentagon budget. There's no military solutions to them. To be able to solve them, we actually need to have a level of human collaboration, including with countries like China and enemies like Russia, than we've ever had before. Otherwise, we will all lose. And while Biden says that climate change is the existential threat, he has not adjusted his policies accordingly. That's a massive mistake.
Yeah, there's a huge gap between the Biden candidate rhetoric and the presidential actions. You've really, really done a good job of highlighting that, because I think that's really the essence of this presidency. What he said he was going to do, what he's done, are often very different. Trita, how can people follow what you're doing at Quincy?
They should go to quincyinst.org. or follow us on Twitter at the handle Quincy Inns, and see the work that we're doing. We're trying to shift the paradigm of American foreign policy towards one that really does focus on the real threats. And that's not to belittle the challenges that Russia, China, and other states pose, or and nuclear Iran, for instance, but to recognize that we're much better off resolving some of those issues and managing those diplomatically, rather than thinking that everything we do needs to be led by the military.
Yeah, compromise has gotten a bad name in American diplomacy the last two decades, and that may be to our detriment long-term, Chita. And also, Chita, we can follow you at T. Parsi, right, on Twitter?
Correct. T. Parsi on Twitter.
It is always an honor to have you on the show. Really enjoy your work at Quincy and all the stuff you're doing, and try to get you back on soon.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, sir. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll have another interview right after this.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
All right, folks, welcome back for the commercial break. Time to dive into that economy. I know no one wants to be thinking about it. It's so depressing to get there, but it's important to know what's on the horizon, what's going on, how to read today's signals so you make good decisions tomorrow. And we have nobody better for helping us do that. He's done it for the last year consistently. Philip Patrick, our good friend from Birch Gold, is joining us again. Philip, great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me back, as always.
You know, I was thinking the other day, if only Janet Yellen had been listening to you, she wouldn't have had this terrible moment last week. All of a sudden last week, she said, "Boy, I just didn't see this long-term inflation coming. I just totally missed it." You didn't miss it. You were calling it before anyone. Your thoughts when you hear her say that, and I don't even know what to make of it.
I mean, look, it's not surprising at this point. It's so clear how wrong she was. I think admitting it was, quite frankly, the only thing she could do. It came on the back, and I think more importantly, she had a meeting with Biden and, of course, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell last Tuesday. And it was out of that meeting that she came out saying, "Hey, I think, you know, we were wrong about the path that inflation would take." Now, admitting you have a problem obviously is the first step. So, it's a positive, but it doesn't change a thing about the reality of the situation. And people are feeling it here in the United States. We've got inflation now at 40-year highs. Now, the only interesting thing to come out of that was they said, look, we've now got a plan to tackle this inflation. So that was what came out of this meeting. And that was the interesting part of this.
Yeah, no, it really is. What do you read the Fed's next steps to be? I mean, obviously, interest rates are going to keep having to go up. That's going to slow the economy down. But what else should we be looking for?
Look, the plan that they laid out, and this is Biden's plan that he laid out in an op-ed to the Wall Street Journal, it was three-pronged. And on the surface, it read to be a good plan, right? They said, look, let's let the Federal Reserve do their jobs. That was part one. Let's lower cost on essentials. That was part two. And let's reduce the budget deficit. Now, like I said, on the surface, it appears to be a workable plan. But as you and I know, the devil's in the details. And as I started getting into it, it was concerning, quite frankly. It doesn't appear to be much of a plan. So first of all, let the feds do their jobs. Listen, we've been doing that. right? The Federal Reserve have had free rein to do their job, and literally 50% of their job is price stability. It was this Federal Reserve, or under this Federal Reserve, I should say, that we have had 40-year high inflation, right? It was this Federal Reserve that dismissed it as transitory for almost a year and delayed action. So we've been doing that. It was a bit of a head scratcher. Lowering cost on essentials, obviously important. The very concerning part, though, is as you read through that plan and understood how he's planning to do that, it became concerning. One was to improve infrastructure. Again, we're back to spending money on infrastructure as if somehow that's going to lower inflation. He wanted to lower the cost of childcare. He wants to pass clean energy tax credits. All of this is done to lower the cost of essentials, but it all involves massive money spending, which is the most concerning thing about this administration. The final thing was to reduce the budget deficit. Now, when I read this, I thought it was a typo because it's the only part of the plan that really makes sense. Let's bring it back to what he was saying 6 months ago, right, when he was trying to push through a $3.5 trillion stimulus package, telling us that it was going to lower inflation. The question for me is, which one is it? You cannot have it both ways. If we're serious about reducing a deficit, obvious way to do it is to spend less money. My concern, my big concern, is as we read through this plan, it's clear that he's paying lip service to the idea that spending big means big inflation. He understands that his economic policies don't pass the basic reality check. And I think what's happening here is this guy's a political animal. And he's going to say whatever he needs to say to placate people, but at the same time is desperate to push through massive spending packages. And you've got to ask yourself, why? Why is this guy mortgaging our future here for short-term gain? And I think it starts to become clear. The policies are failing. The approval rating is at an all-time low. And there's no dodging this bullet. So I think at this point, the only option is to up the ante, raise the stakes, doubling down on massive spending packages in the hope to get enough dollars into enough hands to buy enough votes for a second time. But, you know, what's happening is we're digging ourselves into a hole that's going to be very difficult out of.
Yeah. Where it's hard to see the light at the bottom of the hole right now, because it just seems as though the dynamic worsens by the day. As of this morning, according to AAA, at least 9 states in the District of Columbia have a gas now averaging $5 or more. In LA, it was at $7.87 average this weekend. $5 gas could be $6 gas at the current rates. What are the long-term economic impacts when your core energy source is doubling in price?
It's difficult. And I think gas prices for the foreseeable future are set to rise. Jamie Dimon, CEO of JP Morgan, came out. He's now saying we need to prepare for a hurricane, right? He said initially our projections were it would be cloudy. Now we think it's going to be a hurricane coming down the street. He also said he can see oil hitting $150 to $200 a barrel.
Yeah.
That obviously means much higher gas prices. And as we've mentioned before, high oil prices, high gas prices bleed into almost every other commodity. Now, the transportation of every commodity becomes more expensive. Production becomes more expensive. So I don't think we have too much of a reprieve from the inflationary pressures we're feeling. The Fed are going to prioritize it. They're going to raise rates, right? But as we've discussed before, I think these nominal raises that are coming, I think we've got 2 or 3 half a point raises between now and the end of the year, they're enough to do damage to the market. They may temper inflation, they may slow it, but they can't kill it, right? We cannot raise rates enough today to do it. So I think consumers in the United States now have to be prepared for higher prices, at least for the foreseeable future, until we can get a little bit more sanity, we can curb the appetite to spend and really get through this.
one of the places where Americans have felt the bite beyond going to the grocery store, going to the gas store, is they're probably taking a look at their 401k or their pension or their retirement funds, their IRAs. The stock market's been down about 15-16% since the beginning of the year. A little rally today, but a feeling that this is going to be a downward trend towards a bull market at some point. Bear market at some point. Your thoughts on the state of the market and what we might see as these economic hurricanes, as Jamie Dimon called them, start to manifest themselves?
Look, I think it's necessary pain. Like I said, the number one concern here for this Federal Reserve is inflation, and rightly so, because inflation affects everyone here in the United States. When Jerome Powell came out in his last FOMC meeting, what he told Americans is, look, inflation is far, far too high. He essentially said it's the number one priority. And what he said is, he said, look, Americans have to expect some pain in order to tackle the issues. Well, what did he mean by pain? I believe he meant recession, right? What he meant was, we're going to have to raise rates. And in doing so, we're going to sacrifice, I think, both the stock market and the housing market. But I do think it's necessary. So, you know, most people, Jamie Dimon being the most notable, are predicting recession. I think the further we head into the year, the worse the economic picture gets. But I want to get back to the point that, you know, this is necessary pain. As hard as it is to hear, we've been deferring this for too long. We've been pumping money through the markets, economic exuberance for 13 years, and it cannot continue, right? The other alternative is much, much worse, and that is that the Federal Reserve back down, that which I don't think will happen, by the way. They start to lower rates again, quantitative easing gets back in full swing. If that happens, inflation today will be a drop in the bucket. We can expect very, very high levels of inflation here in the United States. So as hard as it is to stomach, recession is the best option in front of us today, as I see it.
Yeah, that is not a palatable sound, but it's probably the only true thing. Almost every economist that I've talked to in the last 2 weeks said it's inevitable. Now, one of the good things is, if you take all of the excessive spending out, you take inflation, gas prices, if energy prices were to come down because energy production went up, some of the fundamentals of the economy are strong. They're just being suppressed and impacted negatively by policy. If there were a change in power, the core economic foundation of the country, you still feel good about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think it's a tough job for who inherits, you know, in 2024. It's going to be a tough job. And like I said, a lot depends on how much we can curb Biden in the midterms, because if this guy gets his way from a spending standpoint, we could have an unsolvable issue by 2024.
Right.
But I think we'll manage to do that. And look, we're not Argentina. The fundamentals of our economy are much stronger. We're still global reserve. We're still the most powerful economy in the world. So, of course, I think the underlying fundamentals are there, but we need to push ourselves on a different trajectory, because if we really understand the debt issue, we understand that, like I said before, we're digging a hole that at some point, if we continue down the path, it's going to be very difficult to get out. But the fundamentals of the economy here are in many ways still strong. It's just about steering us down the right path.
Yeah, that really is the key. All right. So you're sitting there and you're like, all right, my pension and IRA and retirement are going down 15-20%. I'm nervous about that. It's getting more expensive at the gas pump, at the food store, another place where pain is becoming more obvious. What is the best posture for someone right now to endure this scenario, which, by the way, is a long way off from being finished?
Yeah, there's no question. We got to weather the storm, right? And the problem that we have right now is that you're not getting a reprieve from the traditional asset classes. As you mentioned, stocks down now in the teens for the year so far. The bond market down, the broad bond market down about 10% for the year so far. The problem is, it's almost a double whammy, if you will, right? Because if your assets are decreasing in value and everything around us is increasing in value, you get hit on both sides, right?
So
for me, it's about finding an asset that is conducive for the climate we're in. And that's where I think precious metals have the advantage today. They are commodities, which means that as the cost of living, as inflation rises over time, they are designed to move to keep pace with it. Usually when we see major downturns in the stock market, safe haven demand peaks and it drives gold and silver up. Don't forget, they doubled within, you know, a year and a half of the 2008 crash. So I think people need to be looking at our issues and saying, okay, how do I hedge my exposure? And that's where I think precious metals come in. And that's what we do here at Birch Gold Group. If anyone has an IRA or a 401k or just cash in the bank and they want to purchase physical precious metals, we can facilitate that structure either tax deferred or for direct delivery through a cash purchase, and it'll allow them to hedge their other exposure.
Yeah, until I started partnering with you, I didn't know that that existed as a retirement option. It's so fascinating, liberating to know that. You guys have a great 20-page kit that really gets people up to speed. What's the best way for people to quickly start reading up and learn, hey, here's a new arsenal, a new weapon for my arsenal of retirement savings? What's the best way to get up to speed and get that kit in your hands?
Look, I think you can text just news to 989898. You can come to our website at birchgold.com, and that's what we are here for.
Yeah, it's an amazing kit. I'll tell you, the sophistication in which precious metals can be brought into your retirement strategy, particularly in a time like this. And you look at the 20, 30-year trend in precious metals, it's one of the few things that really has not dropped in value. It keeps its value better than almost any other aspect. Why is that? Why is it that precious metals have been so remarkably stable in an era where we've had a lot of fluctuations?
It's just their nature, right? And in particular, gold. Gold is a wealth preserver, right?
Yeah.
It's an asset that is designed to hold buying power. I tell people, in biblical times, an ounce of gold bought somebody 400 loaves of bread. Today, an ounce of gold buys 400 loaves of bread. So people need to understand, gold's buying power holds. What fluctuates every day is the dollar, right?
Yeah.
So as the dollar gets weaker, gold goes up because you need more weaker dollars to buy gold, right? So gold is a store of value, and it always has been. And that's why central governments use it to support balance sheets, and individuals can do the same thing.
Yeah, such an important dynamic, and for people to remember and to get educated on. Folks, this is a great thing. It's a no-obligation info kit. You can learn just how to incorporate gold into your retirement strategies, particularly in a time when all of your other levers are not letting you down right now. You look at your performance in the last year, it's got to be pretty depressing looking at the market performance. So gold is a place to go. All you got to do, text the word JUST NEWS to 989898, and you will be up and running with a lot of information. That's the best way to arm yourself. Philip, always an honor to have you on. You've been ahead of the curveball. Like I said, I think Janet Yellen should be paying more attention to you, because you had this one right long before she had this one right. And it's always been an honor to have you on the show.
It's always an honor to be on. Thank you, John.
All right. We'll talk to you real soon. Folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up for the day.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
All All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports. So glad you can join us today. So excited to have the opportunity to talk foreign policy and economics in the same show. Both of those are affecting American interests worldwide. You know it when you go to the gas pump, where now 9 states in the District of Columbia now have an average gas price of 5, and California just slipped into today, this morning, $6 a gallon average gasoline. Oh my God. If you want to know what the left wants to do to the rest of the country, look at California. It is the lab for most of the progressive policies. And you know what $6 gas means? You're cutting your budget somewhere else so you can take the kids to school in your car. All right, before we go, I want to mention, as always, a great offer that we had today. I want to reinforce what Philip Patrick said. If you were impressed to hear that there is a way to insulate your 401k and your IRA retirement investments with precious metals and gold, and you want to learn how to do that? I didn't know that existed until I became partners with Birch Gold. Well, Philip Patrick has a very simple way to do it. All you do is text the word "just news" to 989898. One more time, "just news" to 989898, and get your free, no obligation info kit. It'll tell you everything you need to know to make the transition to inserting gold into your IRA and 401k qualified plans. I learned about it. It opened my eyes. It's changed my entire investment thinking as it relates to retirement, and it will you as well. If you just take the chance, go do it today. Just text the words "just news" to 989898 to get started. You heard what Philip Patrick said, a lot of wisdom, and he's been right about every aspect of the economic downturn. And what is he saying now? Recession, the big R word. He's predicting that is really the only self-course correction available to America right now. You heard that today. All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Report. So glad you can join us. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition. Thanks for tuning in and being part of our family. See you tomorrow. Have a good night. God bless you. God bless this great country. At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.